Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go. It's hour two. It is great to have you here. We're in Los Angeles. It's the Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1, The Herd brought to you by Jersey Mike Subs. Be a sub above. Joy Taylor is joining me. And Joy, Joel Klatt's here in a couple minutes. Michigan State's as big a college game as we have had in a long time.
Very exciting.
I even told my wife, I said, honey, I haven't seen you in a while. You got to give me 3 hours Saturday. I've got to watch that. Huge game for Mel Tucker and Jim Harbaugh. But I'm going to go, before I get clapped, Joy, I'm a nerd. I like data.
Mm-hmm.
I like trends. And so I'm going to go for 5 minutes on something, and you're going to have to hear me out because this could just be long-winded.
Okay.
All right. So I think it's really important in America that once you introduce tech or artificial intelligence, there is no going back. There's too much money in it. So a government has to have certain regulations in place about how much tech we introduce and how much artificial intelligence. I'm a capitalist all the way, beginning, end, middle. But we need an economy where farming and manufacturing and law and banking and retail and education are also vibrant. Not just tech, where people in tech make all the money. My kid's a tech savant. But it's not going to be a good life or a good country if only people who are coders get rich and everybody else is rubbing nickels together. Is that it is important in football similarly that you should be able to win more than one way. It can't be just the six teams that have great quarterbacks. Physical play matters, running games. And we've gotten to a very interesting point, and I want to discuss this because right now in the NFL standings this morning, I saw something that I thought was rather disturbing, and I wonder if you have noticed it. In 2017, we had four helpless teams, and that's about the league average my entire life. And I would say helpless is four wins or less. In 2017, there were four of those. And in 2018, there were four of those. And in 2019, there were four of those. And then last year it crept up to six. And this morning there are 8 to 9. We ain't halfway through the season. This is a disturbing trend. Tom Brady, I had a great privilege to talk to him this weekend. And Brady has been thinking about this. And why it's important is because Tom is benefiting from what is happening to the league. He's not a critic of it because it punishes him. He's actually extending his career because the league now is putting such an emphasis and a protective shield around quarterbacks. There's only one way to win. Folks, the average margin of victory last weekend was a disturbing 19.7 points. That not a single football team in the National Football League that is a 7-point dog or more has won a game. What about the farmers and the manufacturers and the teachers? What about defense and physical play and running games and being able, like Dave Wannstedt did, to get Jay Feely to the playoffs? Brady talked about that when I asked him if you could make one change in the NFL rules, CBA, anything, and he talked about what he sees as a disturbing trend.
The game that I played 20 years ago is very different than the game now in the sense that now it's more skills competition than it is physical football. I think in some ways they're taking away a physical element to the game that was the only way at one point to beat skill was to be tough. And when we played the Pittsburgh Steelers, they were tough. And when we played the teams that were just skillful, we won. And I think what's happening now is the way the rules are being set, I don't think that it's always in the best interests of the game that I once played.
Exactly. We don't want Canadian football. We don't want college football with 20-point blowouts. College football is its own entity. But I love the fact that one of the greatest, smartest players, not just greatest, Tom Brady, arguably the greatest, is seeing it too. You've got to allow teams that don't have Aaron Rodgers and Kyler Murray, you've got to allow them to win too. I looked this morning. There were 8 teams that I literally felt hopeless about. I didn't count Seattle, although with Geno, they feel like it. They couldn't beat a marginal New Orleans team. They, after a touchdown early, couldn't move the ball. Like, football's at its best when there's a lot of ways to win. America's at its best when there's a lot of ways to provide a great life for your family. I'm off my soapbox. All right, and with that, we bring in a man that needs no soapbox. We spar. We go into the octagon every week. Joel Klatt, the voice of college football for Fox Sports. All right, my man. Little soapbox there.
No, I appreciated it and really enjoyed it. That was very good. That was very good.
Thank you for tolerating that, Joy. Sometimes I get into my social
I thought it was very insightful, Colin. Okay.
All right, so let's
I mean, you basically just regurgitated what Brady said, but still very insightful.
So here's what's interesting. You and I are, a lot of these people in the media, and I'd like to say, first and foremost, I am fortunately am part of the media, though I don't consider myself anything more than America's honesty broker. But nonetheless, you and I have supported Harbaugh. He's a little disappointing to us, sure. But he's won 72% of his games. Lloyd Carr won like 74%.
Yeah, right around there.
Shem Beckler, 77, 78. But it's interesting. I said to you this morning, I said, okay, he's 2-12. Against top 10 teams. Mm-hmm. All right, that's not great. And he can't beat Ohio State. Eh, whatever. I said, but he's 3-3 against Michigan State. I said, if you just took those three and he was 6-0 against Michigan State, he'd have something to grab onto. And you said, oh, no, no. I'm going to distill it down to a game.
Yeah.
And this, I think, is fascinating. Take the floor.
I think that with Harbaugh, and this is not an excuse, because I'll be the first one to tell you that, like, it's been under what I think we expected. I thought at this point they would be on more equal footing with Ohio State. Okay, so I believe that Jim has underperformed at Michigan.
I do too. Fair.
To be fair, right. Now, having said that, you can distill down the quote-unquote disappointment of Jim at Michigan to 2 snaps of the football, maybe even 1 snap of the football. Not year, not game, snap of the football.
This is fascinating.
If you go back to the punt, that turned into a fumble, that turned into a touchdown for Michigan State in the last, you know, what is it, 5 seconds of the game. In that year, if they just kick the ball away and win the game, they win the division and go to the Big Ten Championship, likely win the championship and go to the playoff.
He would have a playoff.
Big Ten Championship, and he would be not even just 6-0, 4-2 against Michigan State. You can literally boil it down. Now, if you go one more snap of the football the same year, in which he got and a lot of people agree with me, a really bad spot against Ohio State.
Wait,
I've told
all,
this to Urban Meyer, no, right to his face.
A terrible spot. Everybody except Buckeyes knows they got jobbed on that spot.
It's a 4th down play. Yes. For whatever reason, the other network did not have a camera down the line. I still have no idea how that happens in a game that big with the amount of equipment that they have. But JT Barrett, in my mind, was probably short of that 4th down. If that is called correctly, Michigan not only beats Ohio State, but again, win the division, likely win the Big Ten, and go to the playoff. So 2 snaps of the football would completely change the narrative. And yet, I will stand by what I said to begin this, which is Jim has underperformed to the point of what I thought he was going to do. We sat on the desk together. We did a pregame show before the Thursday night game, his first of his career at Michigan as a head coach.
Yeah.
They were about to play Utah, Kyle Whittingham's Utah team. And we sat on the desk, and the conversation was, I remember it vividly, how long until Michigan's a top 10 team? And I thought to myself, they could probably do it sometime this year, maybe next. And you thought I was crazy. You were like, what? They did it that year. They got into that mode. They were winning 10 games. The next year, they were winning 10 games. He has done a lot of really good things, returned Michigan to a place where they can talk about things at the upper echelon, which they could not do under Rich Rod or Brady Hoke. But having said that, it really boils down to the games against Michigan State. And that's why this week is so fascinating, is because here he is again, undefeated, and yet it feels like the fan base is ready for the shoe to drop in Michigan, whereas at Michigan State, they are just wildly excited about what Mel has built in such a short time.
Think about this. If he wins this weekend, and they're favored, and I think they will close. They'll win close. I don't think Michigan's offense is built to take advantage of Michigan State's weakness, which is their secondary. So I think it'll be a close game, but Michigan will win. But it's interesting. If he won this weekend, if you just change that snap, he is then 5-2 against Michigan State. He is go to a playoff. He wins a conference championship.
It's totally different.
We say this all the time. Life is a, there have been so, situationally, I mean,
the Brady Tuck rule. I mean, you go back to just individual snaps of the football throughout history,
Pete
and it Carroll changes everything.
Is two plays from a second national title and a second Super Bowl.
That's right. I mean
an inch.
That's right.
Lendale White's an inch shy, or Vince Young never gets that ball back.
Well, and he should have learned his lesson out of the first one, is that the best player on the planet in college football wasn't on the field on that fourth down play against Texas. Reggie Bush was on. Whether you give it to him or not, he's not on the field to influence the defense. And Marshawn Lynch doesn't touch the ball on that goal line snap. He should have learned his lesson out of that college game.
Let me throw this at you. You set 44 school records as Colorado's starting. You did. You set 44. Now, at that point, it was an intramural program.
But nonetheless, was it? That's right. That's right.
It was a smaller program.
We used to run the option, Colin. That's how you set records.
Okay, but it was funny. I watched Kenny Pickett this weekend.
Yeah.
Okay, so he's the Pitt quarterback. Now, he's kind of a beer-drinking, good-looking kid, easy thrower.
Yes.
He's been there forever. I swear to God, he's there for the hot lunch program.
That's
he's been
right.
there for like 12 years. Is he? I watched him, and I wanted to watch him against Clemson because Clemson's a little down.
But their defense is still good.
Their defense is still good, but I watched him. What is your interpretation of what he becomes? What do you see with him? Because he is an easy thrower.
I see a lot of, now different stylistically,
yeah,
but I see a lot of these hyper veteran college quarterbacks that end up figuring it out late in their college career and become really good NFL quarterbacks. Guys like Baker Mayfield, Jalen Hurts, Joe Burrow. There was one on Mac Jones. That's kind of, again, different stylistically than a lot of those guys, but he is making throws that he just didn't. And this speaks to the element of allowing young quarterbacks, young football players to grow and to evolve.
You know, it's just funny. As I watched him, I thought to myself, oh, yeah, he throws an NFL ball.
Right.
He's got the size. It looks like an NFL quarterback. And Pitt doesn't have great players, although they're playing pretty good football. But it wasn't because I watched him. I mean, he's mobile enough. He's got a Daniel Jones. He's mobile enough. He'll probably run a 4.75, 4.8. He's mobile enough.
But that's the mold I see him in. And we've seen this a lot over the last few years. Guys that are veteran college quarterbacks that figure it out late.
Yeah, it's very interesting because he's when I watched him, I really sat down for an hour. I'm like, I'm watching Kenny Pickett. And I thought, okay, he's an NFL quarterback. I just don't know if he's a backup or a starter.
So here's what's great about guys like Kenny Pickett or Mac Jones or Joe Burrow or Baker or these guys is that they can stick around the college game long enough to actually learn football and not just rely on their talent. And in a lot of these cases, they're not quite physically gifted enough just to rely on that and be a great player like Justin Fields or a Trevor Lawrence early. So they've got to figure out the schematics of the game. They've got to get in deep with the why, not just the how, of how to be successful on the football field. And because of that, they can go and they can translate that into success earlier in their pro career. I think Kenny's going to get a shot. He probably has played himself into the first round, maybe even high into the first round.
Yeah.
And he's going to be another one of these stories. You know, it's Joe Burrow. It's Mac Jones. Now it's going to be Kenny Pickett.
You know what I thought? Because he's not flashy. You know what I thought? He's going to go about 12th to 15th. What does that mean? Like Mac Jones? Pretty good football team.
A decent football team. That's where you want to be drafted.
Yeah, I thought this is the kind of guy that drops to 16 and ends up going to a team like that's kind of ready to go. That's kind of got pieces. Okay, so I'm going to throw a couple things out there. This is very interesting. Because of my labyrinth of sources in the industry, I heard that James Franklin at Penn State, who had a brutal loss against Illinois, not great, he changed agents.
In the summer.
Okay, in the summer. Okay. My sources were late, apparently. The point is this. I had two people text me, and they're like, oh, you can't hire him for the USC job after that. And I'm like, oh, give me a break. People lose. I mean, Pete Carroll lost to Oregon State up in Corvallis. What is the temperature on James Franklin, Penn State, USC today, in your opinion?
I have heard that the temperature is quite warm for him, both at USC and potentially at LSU, because of his success in the SEC footprint, right, when he took a Vanderbilt program that was nothing and ended up being a very good to strong program in the SEC. I know that he's not going to want to talk about that, and he talks about not being distracted, although this week in his press conference preparing for Ohio State, he said, "I'm just trying to get ready for Illinois in the Big House," which, of course, you're getting ready for the Buckeyes in the horseshoe. But nevertheless, I don't think that the agent thing is a big deal. I think that this was blown out of proportion in terms of when it was reported. What I believe is that he changed this agent in the summer, and it was unrelated to all of these coaching changes before USC or LSU even came up. Now, he's going to be on a short list of 3 to 4 on both of these lists. And so you're going to have to start diving in and looking under the microscope. Where does he want to be? Does he want to leave potentially and go to try it at one of these other programs? Does he feel like the ceiling has been hit at Penn State? I've been told that Matt Rhule is not all the way in on the NFL moving forward, and that he could potentially come back down to any number of these jobs.
So let's segue to the Mike Tomlin said, "Forget it, I'm not going to USC."
What a good answer. That was amazing.
That was the best. But it does lead to this, and Joy may have said, somebody said this to me, and I can't remember who it was. They said, you know, Mike Tomlin made it look like a small job, like it's Cal State Fullerton baseball. And it was like, to me, is USC unrealistic? USC's talking Tomlin, and they're going to call McVay. And then I think to myself, shouldn't they just go get a college coach? I mean, are they going too big? Do you think USC, Tomlin saying that, his opinion is a realistic opinion? Like, college football at the Pac-12, this is not the job it used to be.
I'll be the first one to say, like, if I had a conversation with Mike Bone, the athletic director at USC today, I would tell him, swing as big as you possibly can. Now, some of those might be out of your range. I think Mike Tomlin's probably one of those because of the job that he has, right? He's at an organization that will give you patience, that will be real. You know, they look at you with clear eyes. They don't have unrealistic expectations year to year. It's an organization that has had three coaches over the course of basically two generations.
Yeah.
So I think that it's more about the job that he has, and he articulated that beautifully. I love Mike Tomlin and his answer to that question. Having said that, though, USC should swing as big as they possibly can. Now, I think it has more to do with fit and style than it does with anything else. They need somebody that understands how to be big and yet also small enough to allow his own players to be stars, because that's how you have success at USC. Now
that feels like James Franklin to me.
Could be.
That's what it feels like to me.
It could be. I don't think it sounds like Luke Fickell.
No.
I think Luke Fickell fits really well at, let's just say, for sake of argument, these jobs pop open. I'm not saying that they will. Let's say, for sake of argument, Michigan State or Penn State or, you know, a Big Ten job. Luke Fickell is kind of your man at that point.
Yes.
Matt Campbell is your man. But those, I don't know if those two guys are cut out or
That's
cut
right.
from the cloth that would succeed at USC, because you need that NFL-style DNA. And what I mean by that is that you've got to be comfortable enough in your own skin for your quarterback to be a bigger star than you are. And that's the type of coach that you need at USC.
Okay, let's go to Klatt's top 10. Now, before I see it, I hope you don't have Cincinnati up there.
I do not. You might be happy where I have them. I've got Cincinnati at number 8.
Thank you. Finally, I gotta, you know, I'm usually I feel like this is almost teacher student, but in this instance, you are really making me very happy, because
well, here's
this is
the reason behind Cincinnati.
This is
mind.
Exactly where they should be.
The reason behind Cincinnati, I love what they're doing, but the problem is that I am a big conference snob. All right.
Yeah.
I'm just unapologetically so. It's much tougher to go through even a Pac-12 or even ACC schedule than it is to go through the Group of Five schedule like Cincinnati is. So the burden of proof is on you.
Thank you.
It's not enough to just win. So when you do what you did against Navy, albeit against a triple option, albeit on the road, you can't be sitting there having to get an interception after they got an onside kick in a one possession game. I'm sorry, that's not afforded you. I also dropped Oklahoma because you can't go to Kansas and be in a dogfight with Kansas like they were in that game. That's why I moved it around.
Yeah.
And by the way, people are like, oh, you can't believe you did what you did with Ohio State. There is a clear mark between number three and everybody else. I've got Georgia, Ohio State, Alabama.
I totally agree.
And I toyed with who's better, Alabama, Ohio State. I'm not sure. And I kind of slotted it this way. And here's the reason. I've got Ohio State number two because in the last four games, their defense, which was their Achilles heel, is the number two scoring defense in the country behind Georgia and the number two yards per play defense behind Georgia. They're averaging over 50 points per game. C.J. Stroud, since he came back from that injury, he's thrown for over 300 yards, 14 touchdowns, no interceptions. Watch out for Ohio State. Sneaky C.J. Stroud might win the Heisman Trophy, and this might be the team that ends up playing the SEC champion in the national championship game.
Finally. It's nothing against listen, a lot of these college football guys, they feel guilty.
Well, I did feel guilty about that. I want
moving Cincinnati to eight.
The one I feel most guilty about is Oregon. I know that they're not better than Ohio State, and yet they beat them. And at the end, I will give them the benefit of the doubt because of that. They have earned the right to be ranked higher than Ohio State.
They can't throw
when push
the ball.
Comes to shove.
They can't throw
Anthony
the-
Brown had his best game of his life, really, against UCLA last week.
Ew.
But Oregon scares me a little bit in a conference that's schizophrenic and anybody can beat anybody on any given Saturday,
right,
except for Arizona and Colorado.
Yeah. All right, Clatt, you know what? We're going to end it right there.
I thought you did your homework assignment.
You came in.
It was a homework assignment?
You handed me an apple on the teacher's desk. I really feel you delivered today.
Going with academic analogies, we're going to have to talk about the plagiarism of that take from Tom Brady.
That's a good point. I just move off that one. It never happened.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Hey, it's me, Rob Parker. Check out my weekly MLB podcast, Inside the Parker, for 22 minutes of piping hot baseball talk featuring the biggest names and newsmakers in the sport. Whether you believe in analytics or the eye test, we've got all the bases covered. New episodes drop every Thursday, so do yourself a favor and listen to Inside the Parker with Rob Parker on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Last night, the Braves' offense jumped out to fuel them to a 1-0 series lead. Now the Astros will try to even the score before the scene shifts to Atlanta. Game 2 of the World Series tonight at 7:30 Eastern, 4:30 Pacific on Fox and the Fox Sports app. David Ortiz is giving away $25,000 for Game 2 of the World Series tonight on the Fox Bet Super 6 app. Super 6 players have won over $5 million, and you could be the next to win Big Poppy's money. Scan the QR code, download the app, and answer 6 questions about the game before the first pitch tonight on Fox. Don't miss out. It's free to play.
Houston evens it up tonight. Houston can't go down 2-0 at home. Sorry, not going to happen. Joy Taylor with the news.
No. Turn on the news. This is the Herdline News, sponsored by Mercedes-Benz. The best or nothing.
Well, we are all on watch for the trade deadline on November 2nd, which is next week. And obviously, the big name is Deshaun Watson and what will happen with that. According to John McClain of the Houston Chronicle, the compensation in a potential trade for Deshaun Watson between the Dolphins and Texans has been agreed to.
Yeah, that's substantial. So they've agreed on all the draft picks.
Stephen Ross, the Dolphins owner, has even approved the trade. But the sticking point is that he wants Watson's legal issues resolved before it's executed. Well, that's not going to happen before next week.
Right.
So I don't know why, again, we're having this conversation if the reality is very clear that it is not going to happen.
Well, newspaper people leak stuff. So somebody from Houston is acknowledging, and Miami, we're doing the deal. We're just waiting for this. So why are
but
Houston?
You can't wait for it. There's 22
civil cases.
He's going to court for each of those civil cases.
Right, but why does somebody want it out? So they want it. Houston wants to make it known we've got somebody, and Miami wants to be it known we're a player in the quarterback market. I mean, I think these teams want this out, or it wouldn't be out.
Miami doesn't want to negotiate against themselves,
right? Right.
So it's in the best interest to see if there are any teams out there who are also interested.
Houston, and the Texans want more people to jump
Houston
in too.
Want more people in it because they want to try and get a better deal.
That's right.
They're going to trade him, which it is still up to Houston whether they trade him or not. And Deshaun has a no trade clause, so he can limit which of these deals actually goes through Houston wants to.
He cleared the Miami Dolphins. He said, I would go there.
Yes. The Dolphins are still on the table. But the legal side of things are not, it could be years before right. this is done. Years, multiple years.
Unless does Deshaun Watson write a check?
No, he doesn't want to settle because he believes that would be an admission of guilt, according to McClain. Okay.
So that there's that, because my question is, could it be settled if he just wrote a big fat check?
I am not a lawyer, so I don't have the exact answer to that. Right. But yes, if it's a civil case,
you could.
They are not, it's not a, from what I understand, it is not a class action case where if you, a bunch of people are suing one company,
right.
the company writes a check, then everyone gets
these are all
you know,
separate.
Equal checks. These are each separate cases. So he has to, if he was going to settle with each individual case individually or go to court with each of these cases individually. If you've ever been involved in the court system, that ain't going to happen by next week.
Yeah.
So this whole idea that Stephen Ross wants an answer for the legal situation, we all want an answer. We would all like to know what is going on with this, but investigations have to be done to completion.
Right.
There's the civil situation.
Right.
There's the criminal investigation. There's a rumored federal investigation. And then you have the NFL's investigation, which Roger Goodell said yesterday, they're not going to get involved and mess up any of the investigations that are currently going on. Now, I'm sure they already have their sources and information and due diligence that they've already done, but they haven't completed their investigation to give any sort of punishment if they're going to do that. And he's not on the exempt list yet. So there's a million unknowns in this situation, which is why, I don't understand how, if you're the Dolphins, unless you're just going to do it,
yeah,
you just do it. Like, you know what the situation is, and you're not going to have an answer by the trade deadline. Roger Goodell said yesterday at the owners' meeting that Deshaun Watson is eligible to play. If he was traded today, he'd be eligible to play for his new team tomorrow. So trade deadline is next Tuesday at 4 Eastern, November 2nd. I don't know what any of this means, but I do know that the Dolphins are taking a tremendous risk. And as far as I'm concerned, they've already broken glass as far as Tua goes with being this far into the negotiations with Watson, with the Houston Texans for Watson. So unless Tua does something, if this doesn't go through and Tua isn't spectacular for the rest of the year, they're in the quarterback market next year, no matter what happens with Tua, unless he is over the top spectacular, because you've already moved this far into it with Watson. So Ben Simmons is back working with the 76ers, and he's also undergoing treatment for mental health and his injured back. And TNT's Ali LaFleur gave an update on Simmons during last night's game. She said he has worked out at the facility in Camden with the team as recently as this morning. Members of the front office confirmed with me that he is receiving professional help for his mental health through the players' union, and he is also undergoing regular treatment on his back. She also said that Doc Rivers told her that Simmons broke the ice while speaking with his teammates on Friday and called it a huge moment for the team. The Sixers also told Ali that they plan to continue to pay him as long as he is working towards getting better. Obviously, we're showing video now of him at practice. He was not in the huddles and was kicked out of practice and suspended game one for his behavior. So it seems as if they are still actively trying to make it work with Ben Simmons and the team. Now, is this all, a way to resolve the tension so that you still move forward with the trade and a trade seems more realistic to other teams? Possibly. But as it currently stands, he's still a Sixer and they got to try and find a way to make it work. So one of America's greatest athletes is calling it a career. Carly Lloyd played her final game last night for the U.S. Women's National Team. 6-0 victory over South Korea. She said following the game, it was one of the most special nights she had in her life, and she was happy it ended on a win. She didn't have a goal last night, but she, at the age of 39, ranked second in the world for most ever international appearances for any player ever, having played 315 career games. She scored 134 goals with the U.S. That's the third most in the history of the women's team, and only one female player has appeared in more games, 316, than Lloyd did over her 16 plus years. And she became the first American, male or female, to score in four different Olympics. And her 10 total goals is a record amongst U.S. women. So an incredible career. And she was also given a jersey with 316 on it, which is the number of games that she's played for the U.S. women's national team. So incredible athlete, amazing career. And this is, our women's team is starting to get a little older. We're bringing in some some new youth, but yes. She is a pioneer and an incredible athlete and had an amazing career.
Also, can you imagine? She's seen the world.
Yeah.
When you play for our national teams, men or women, Alexi Lawless, we know, and you play as long as she had, just the places she has played, the world she has seen. That is greatest geography class. You can't get it in college. You can't get it in high school. Our soccer teams see the world. Impoverished countries, wealthy countries. They've faced hostile environments. Just the places she's been in the world and been part of our team. She's been in four Olympics.
Four Olympics.
God.
There's no education like travel.
I mean, that she has lived a full life. 39 years old, the places she has seen in the world. I'm not jealous of much. It's like, that's really an amazing experience.
No, it's a very unique experience.
And mostly won all those games. And lose a lot. Joy of the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News. Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Fox Bet Super 6 wants you to stack the cash, scan the QR code, download the app, and enter the free-to-play NFL Sunday Challenge Contest. Make your picks, and then invite your friends to play as well. The jackpot is already over $180,000. The more people who enter, the bigger it gets.
Mark Schlereth, Fox Sports NFL analyst, is joining us now live. He had the Giants-Panthers Week 7, where Sam Darnold got benched and probably needed to. The Giants were humiliated by the Rams, came back and played well. By the way, I haven't asked you this as a former, you know, got all these Super Bowl rings, Washington, Denver. Where do you stand today on Daniel Jones? Do you buy it, or do you think, I mean, where do you stand with him today as a franchise guy?
Yeah, I would, Colin, I would say I don't necessarily trust him as of yet. He's one of those guys that if you give him the opportunity to be outside the pocket, you give him the opportunity to run with the football, you do all those things for him, you balance him out a bit, I think he's pretty good. He's very athletic. But the bottom line, if you're asking him to go win a game from the pocket for you, he's not there yet. And, you know, that part of that is locking on to targets. Part of that is getting sloppy with your feet. Part of that is an accuracy issue. All those things. He's trending upward. But I still wouldn't trust him as a franchise guy yet.
You know, it's interesting. I was talking to somebody in Chicago that covers the Bears yesterday, and we were going back and forth on this, and I said, listen, that offensive line is so bad, the Bears literally had to bail on their best corner, yet they don't pay either of their quarterbacks. I'm like, they can't figure out the cap. If you can't figure out that, I mean, the Rams are paying Goff a fortune still and Stafford, and they still got a loaded roster. Dallas is playing multiple people. They still have a loaded roster. What do you make of Justin Fields? What do you make of Matt Nagy? Where are you on that today, yeah. Mark?
Listen, Colin, you know, I've heard this. I've heard analysts talk about this a bunch. They said, well, they're not in the right offense for Justin Fields. Matt Nagy doesn't have him in the right. I would just ask you, what's the right offense? What do you want the kid to do? You mentioned it, and you're 100% right. One, they're running the heck out of the ball. They've taken a guy that nobody heard of in Khalil Herbert, and all of a sudden that guy's getting 30 carries a game. They're running the heck out of the ball. They're very efficient there. They're setting up the play action. I don't know what you want him to do, and I hear this. Well, he was very successful at Ohio State. Yeah, because every time he lined up, they're exponentially more talented than the team they're lining up against. That's not how it is in Chicago right now. And as far as, you know, I've heard guys complain or analysts complain about, well, he's in spread all the time. You know, they had a bunch of – he dropped back 20 times. They had a bunch of, you know, a bunch of five-man protections. They spread people out. Well, I will tell you, as a quarterback, and there's a lot of quarterbacks this way, you want in protection to spread people out because it's my five guys against your five guys. I know who's coming. It's easier to see. When you condense formations, you get into heavier personnel, you bring a bunch of guys inside in the confines of that structure of your offense, you know what else comes inside? All those defenders. Now it's much harder to pick out who's the potential blitzers, who's the potential rushers, and where my hots are. If I spread them out, it makes it easier on a young quarterback. And I was talking to Ben Roethlisberger just 2 weeks ago, and he said, I'd much rather, from a protection standpoint, spread people out because it's easier to pick out who's coming and who's not coming. And I think that Matt Nagy's doing a good job with a young quarterback who, you know, theoretically, or you know, the film would prove it, he's not quite ready for prime time yet. And They're doing the best they can, and you're 100% right about the O-line. They're awful.
Yeah.
They're awful across the board. So that's more of a personnel issue than it is a coaching issue in my mind.
Yeah, no, that's what I've said. I think it's a personnel issue with them. They pay all their linebackers a fortune, and they're all getting old. They're going to have to reboot this thing, move linebackers, move pieces, start over, and you can do that these days. So, you know, I had a brief interview with Tom Brady. I got to ask him a question this week on some big thing on Sirius XM with Jim Gray. And I asked him if he would make one big change in the NFL, what would it be? And I thought he gave a fascinating answer. He said it's becoming a skills competition, that you can only win one way in the NFL now. Do you have good receivers, a good quarterback, and you can't beat that, is that you can't win with just running, you can't win with just good defense. You grew up in a time there were more ways to win. And I thought it was interesting because Brady's benefiting from this. He's not complaining because it's hurting him. He's acknowledging my 600 touchdown pass. I wouldn't have thrown that 5 years ago, but now the safety can't hit anybody. Do you ever get worried? Do you see that in your games where the league now is very simple? Best quarterback wins. That's basically how you win.
Yeah, if you've got a quarterback that can cover warts, you know, I always think about it from the standpoint of there's only a handful of guys that play quarterback that can cover warts. The rest of them expose warts. And so when you have one that covers warts, yeah, you've got a chance to win every game. I will say this, though. Come playoff time, come playoff football, and this was true last year in the playoffs. The team that captured the line of scrimmage, the team that dominated the line of scrimmage, won every playoff game, 100% of them. And so there is still that aspect of it. Even Tom Brady on the Monday night broadcast with Peyton Manning and Eli Manning said, hey, they asked him what the secret was in the red zone. He said, hey, if you can run the ball in the red zone, it's so hard, it's so condensed, it's so hard to pass the ball in there, that if you can run it in the red zone, you've got a chance to be a really efficient red zone offense. So those things still hold true. Like those things, those principles of dominating the line of scrimmage, being more physical than your opponent, those will never go in and out of style. They always help, but if you have that X factor at the quarterback position, yes, you're going to win a lot more games that way. So, yeah, I'm not going to argue with him. I think he's 100% correct, but I still think you can win without the elite level guy. But you got to have the next tier of guy, right? You got to have the next guy down. Otherwise, you just don't have a chance.
So Case Keenum beats Denver, and Case Keenum's favored over Pittsburgh. Let's say he wins both. He already won one. Then Baker returns. They go to Cincinnati and to New England, and Burrow and Mac Jones are playing the best football ever in the pros. Yeah. I can just see what's going to happen is that if Case beats Pittsburgh and Baker loses at Cincinnati and gets outplayed by Burrow, have you ever been in a quarterback controversy in a locker room where players take sides?
Yeah, I would say yeah. I mean, we don't verbalize it. We don't talk about it. It's kind of like Fight Club. Well, you know, the first rule of Fight Club is you don't talk about Fight Club. but you know the guy you want to play, and you know oftentimes that's not the guy playing, and you realize every time you break the huddle, we don't have a chance. So yeah, I've been in that situation a time or two, but. You know, you just try to be a professional and do your job to the best of your ability and hope for the best. But, yeah, that's, you know, Case Keenum came out and played exceptionally well. And I thought it was the ultimate slap in the face of the Denver Broncos that the Cleveland Browns win the coin toss and they don't defer like everybody does. They say, hey, we've got our JV team and we'll take the ball and we're going to cram it down your throat, Vic Fangio, because we don't think you're any good. And you know what they did? They took the ball and they crammed it down their throat on a five-play drive that was exceptional. And I will say this, Case Keenum orchestrated. He's got great play fakes. When they run the ball that way, Case Keenum can win a lot of games in Cleveland just doing the basics, operating the basics of Kevin Stefanski's offense.
Yeah, plus that Cleveland O-line is something special. Mark Schlereth, 3 rings. Good talking to you, bud.
Likewise, Colin. Take care, buddy.
You bet. That's it. That's actually interesting. Is that Cleveland basically said with their backup quarterback, yeah, well, against Vic Fangio as a defensive coach, we'll take the ball, we'll go score. It's something. That Chicago-San Francisco game this weekend is interesting. So Chicago's at home. You know, when a team's losing, we point fingers, right? Like, that's what we do. Like, I've said this about Seattle and Pete Carroll, and we have Cliff Averill, the former Seahawk, on. What does Seattle do well last 3 years? that's not connected to Russell Wilson. This is not like because they lost two games. Like, nothing. Their defense has gotten worse. Their offensive line, their running game's inconsistent. Their special teams. So, like, when I look at Chicago, we can blame the quarterback, but I thought it was fascinating. They had to get rid of Kyle Fuller, and they're not paying their quarterback. You can't figure the cap out. Get a new banker. Like, that to me is substantial that the Rams have figured out manipulating the cap. And all the good teams do this. The Saints are legendary at this. The Patriots are legendary at this. Chicago can't figure it out. They don't pay quarterback. They pay all their linebacker. They have all their money jammed in one space. You can't do it in this league. So you can blame Justin Fields, but I think they got a clean house upstairs. I think the executive suite, not Nagy, I think the executive suite of the Bears, that's the issue. Third hour coming up on a Wednesday, live in Los Angeles, it's The Herd.